Welcome in to the 48 Minutes Podcast on Believe, presented by Bet Online. I'm Ross Geiger, the former NBA video coordinator, having spent time with the Milwaukee Bucks, Phoenix Suns, and the New York Knicks. And I'm joined alongside Bruce Bernstein, our four-time Emmy Award winner who spent more than three decades at ESPN producing NBA shows, SportsCenter, and soaking up knowledge from the best hoop analysts in the business. And we're also joined by two-time Emmy Award winner Michael Wolby Freer, who is a senior writer at StatFactor, specializing in writing advanced statistical NBA reports for various announcers across the league. This is episode number 96, the Damon Stoudemire episode, as the Mighty Mouse took home the 1996 Rookie of the Year honors, becoming the first rapper to ever do so. Now, fellas, quick trivia question for you here. Damon Stoudemire set the record for three-point field goals made by a rookie with 133, breaking the record held at the time by Dennis Scott. And to no real surprise, Stoudemire's record has been broken several times since. But which player currently holds the record for most threes made as a rookie with 187 threes made during the rookie season? Any guesses?
Keegan Murray.
Not right. Bruce,
Buddy Hield?
Got one?
Buddy Hield?
Closer, but the answer is Donovan Mitchell of the Utah Jazz.
Wow, so, the spider.
Yeah. So before we get into tonight's discussion, just a quick reminder, the tournament is here. BetOnline is your bracket headquarters for this season with the best bracket contest out there. And odds, lines, and info on every round right up until the national championship. You can access the most up-to-the-minute wagering information anytime from your desktop or your mobile devices, and even track your bracket real-time all the way through the tournament. Head to BetOnline today to become part of the team, and remember to use our promo code BLEAV, that is B-L-E-A-V, for a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, the game starts here. And tonight, for our first half, let's take a look here at the top of the Western Conference. And I figured, well, let's go ahead and make a case for each of the top three teams out West. And I have no particular order, Bruce, so I'll let you start us out. Which team would you like to go first with?
Well, let's go in order of the standings. So let's start with the OKC Thunder, currently 52-22, heading into Monday night. Tops in the Western Conference. They have no more head-to-head games left with Denver or Minnesota, but they do have a pretty difficult schedule the rest of the way. They have eight games left. The next four are on the road: Philly, Boston, Indiana, and Charlotte. And then their final four are at home: Sacramento, the Spurs, Milwaukee, and Dallas. Okay. Ooh. This team, as we know, wins with offense. 120 points a game, tied for third. Shooting 50% from the floor as a team, number two behind Indiana, and leading the league in three-point shooting, 39.1%. Solid D, number three in opposing field goal percentage, 12th best in points allowed, number two in point differential, only behind Boston. And as we talked about last week with Tim Legler, the kind of Achilles heel on this team might be their rebounding. They're 27th in rebound differential, and they're actually dead last in turnover differential. So it's an offensive juggernaut, and we'll see if their defense can get close to that level in the postseason.
Well said there, Bruce. And Worldby, what's your take on the young, upcoming Oklahoma City Thunder come playoff time?
I think they're the best case you can make to challenge the Nuggets, to unseat the Nuggets out of the West. They're the number one. They're one of two teams. I've been saying this throughout our season. They're one of two teams that rank in the top five in offensive and defensive efficiency, the Celtics being the other. They're the number one clutch offense in the NBA. They score 127.5 points per 100 possessions in those clutch minutes, which is really an astronomical number, especially when you think about they were one of the worst last season. And they're the number one shooting team in terms of effective field goal percentage in the fourth quarter. Anybody watch Sunday's game against the Knicks where they blew a lead in the fourth quarter and still pulled it out, where they shot 15 of 19 from the field in the fourth quarter? That's unbelievable, almost 80%. They have the tools to get it done, young as they are. If you're looking for a team to try and beat the Nuggets, I think this is the team.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think the Oklahoma City Thunder can certainly space out the floor with their scores and certainly make it a little bit more tough on Denver. A little bit more non-traditional, per se, as far as what Denver is probably used to. as far as, you know, executing some of their defensive sets. But I think with Oklahoma City, they absolutely are the most exciting and intriguing team due to their youth and success throughout this season. But I do have a few questions. And number one, can they survive round two or beyond with just Chet Holmgren down low in a 7-game playoff series? He's going to definitely have to hold up nicely down there. Obviously, not even tweak an ankle for them to really stand a chance. So he's got to stay healthy. And I've got to see that before I believe it. And then number two, are they capable of rebounding enough to hang around playoff games to set the stage for SGA to become a clutch game closer? And of course, we saw that just recently in Madison Square Garden on Sunday night with SGA coming up big. But, you know, I'm much more concerned with question number one surrounding Chet Holmgren than I am if they can stick around in games. But hey, if they keep games close, SGA is going to give them a chance to win any series.
You know, in that Sunday night game against the Knicks, I remember texting you guys both at the time. They almost blew that game because they gave the Knicks like three shots in the last 30 seconds where they couldn't secure a defensive rebound and gave New York opportunities to win, which, you know, they came within 1.8 seconds of doing. And I remember we discussed at the trade deadline, are they going to get another big? Are they going to get another big? They never got another big. And so I think now we're going to see if they can overcome that and how much of a help it would have been had they gotten another big.
Yeah, no doubt. Now, World B, we have two teams left here out west. Which one do you want to talk about next?
I'll take Minnesota. Okay. The case you make for Minnesota is their defense. They're not just number one in the NBA in defense efficiency. They're number one by a large margin, which is, you know, and it's been that way from the start. So they've been consistent all season. Their offense ranks in the bottom half of the league in efficiency. That's a big question mark there. Who knows this, you know, what's going to happen with Towns, his health, and stuff like that. But, you know, they just beat the Nuggets in Denver recently, and they did lose to Denver at home, but that was without Rudy. So, and here's the one telling stat for them why they have a shot is they have the best record in the NBA against teams in the top 10 in the Western Conference, 18-11. So they've gone up. They've not only beaten the best, they've beaten a lot of them this season.
You know, I think their style might actually be better suited for the playoffs because they play a slower paced offense. I mean, they're not a run and gun team. They're used to playing the fewer possessions. You know, they're amongst they're 29th in field goal attempts and 22nd in field goals made. And you know, but you talk about their defense. Here's a telling stat that kind of shows that. They're 18th in points per game, but third in scoring differential. So they hold other teams down, down, down in points. What's going to be interesting to see for them, I think, I mean, if Carl Anthony Towns is able to come back for the playoffs, and there's a chance that he will, that will send Naz Reid back to the bench. And, you know, Naz coming off the bench is a sixth man of the year candidate. I mean, you know, one of the absolute best, if not the best bigs coming off of anybody's bench in the league, 13 points a game in 24 minutes. But, you know, he's had to start a bunch of games with Towns out. So if Towns returns and Naz is able to come off the bench, I think that makes Minnesota much more deadly.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned Carl Anthony Towns, Bruce, because my biggest question is, are they going to be healthy enough to contend? Now, say what you will about Carl Anthony Towns' defense at times. They're definitely going to need him in the playoffs. I mean, that their Twin Towers down low is one of their major advantages, especially with the slow pace that they like to play, as you mentioned. And I thought that was smart that you pointed that out. So, you know, I've got the most question marks of these three teams with Minnesota solely just due to their injury report throughout the season. I mean, even as of today, Anthony Edwards is playing a little banged up as well. You know, wasn't too sharp taking care of the basketball just Sunday night. He had six turnovers. So, you know, if healthy, I could see this team making some serious noise. But the injury to Carl Anthony Towns, not really knowing that status or how, you know, close to 100% he may be, and even Anthony Edwards playing a bit banged up, you know, I just don't know if this is their year. But if the Ant-Man gets hot and stays hot, they've got a chance to do some damage as well as anybody else out west.
You know, they have one more head-to-head game amongst this threesome. They play the Nuggets in Denver on April 10th. And right now, they're a half a game behind Denver. So that game could go a long way towards either giving Denver, you know, the two, or, you know, Minnesota leaping over them. And five of the eight remaining opponents for the Wolves are plus 500 teams. So the schedule will be a challenge.
Yeah, and I mean, I think the next couple of games will really give us a clear understanding whether or not we'll see starters in that game. Because as we know, those last couple of games, typically guys like to rest and whatnot. So if Denver's, you know, solidified their lead in the standings, I don't know if we'll even see the Joker suit up for that one, as coaches like to keep their cards close to their chest here as playoff time comes right around the corner. So that leaves one team remaining. So I'll go ahead and talk about them first, and that is the Denver Nuggets. And the biggest thing for me, outside of the obvious comments you can make about them being the defending champs, is just how impressive they are with their poise. I feel like at no part in this season did they ever really, you know, panic. Obviously, they got off to a little bit of a sluggish start, regained momentum, and have really been a solid, consistent team ever since, you know, that lagging start to the season. But I think this should be the most feared team in all of basketball come playoff time, even with the Celtics included. They're well-balanced. You can't break them or shake them. And they've currently had the best player in the world on their team in the Joker. So it's hard for me to argue against Denver. I think they're obviously the leaders, the team that everyone's trying to come out west. And, of course, even for the Celtics, if they were to make it to the championship, I mean, everyone's got their eyes on Denver being there. And it'd be kind of a shock if we didn't see them there, wouldn't it be, Bruce?
Yeah, and I mean, look, you know, with Boston and Denver, should they meet in the finals, Boston's going to have the home court. But all you got to do is lose one home game, and now you're dealing with the home court advantage for Denver and the altitude. I mean, look, this is the team that I think, you know, is the clear, you know, number one team in the West. As you mentioned, when you talk about their poise, they all take their lead from Joker. They play at their own speed. You cannot speed them up. You can't rattle them. They're mentally tough. They know what it's like to win. They're a very efficient scoring team, shooting just under 50% from the floor as a team, 49.5%. That's tied for fourth in the league. They pass the ball. They share the ball, third in assists. They don't turn it over very much, only fewer than 12 a game, so they take care of the ball. And they're a very good rebounding team, plus 2.2 differential, number eight in the NBA. And they're, you know, very solid defensively. I mean, there's nothing – they can beat you play in their style, and they can beat you play in your style. They can do it either way.
Yep, they're extremely versatile. World B?
Yeah, I mean, best record in the NBA since the break, just, you know, 16-4, just four losses since the All-Star break. Their offense is kicking in gear, number two in efficiency since the break. Their defense, which – before last season's playoffs was their question mark. They picked it up during the NBA finals, as we saw against Miami. And then, you know, this since a break now, they're number six in efficiency defensively since a break. So they're getting it done at both ends. If we worry about the health of Karl Anthony Towns, we got to, you know, worry about the health of Jamal Murray. He's missed last five games, and they've won 3-2 without him. But, you know, who knows? We don't project anything long term into the playoffs, but who knows the status of his health going forward. And they absolutely, as great as he is, they absolutely have to have Joker at his best during the playoffs, which he's, you know, he's proven that he can more than capable of doing it. But they score 18 points per 100 possessions more when he's on the court than when he's off. So they, when he's on the court, they need him at his best. That's an unbelievable contrast, and they have a great starting five. They have a very, you know, the same starting five for 2 years now. So it's, you know, they have a lot of continuity. They know each other very well, and it still all depends on Joker.
Yeah, and I've always seen the Joker rise to the occasion. I can't really recall one moment where he's flopped in a big game or a big time matchup throughout the season. I feel like he always brings his A game when it's needed the most. And as you both pointed out, as far as their rotation is concerned, they just really have a full roster of guys that understand how to be a star in their roles. And as long as you got those two things going for you, you're going to be really hard to beat. And course, that altitude is going to play a factor as well. So if it does come down to Bruce's Celtics and the Denver Nuggets, it is nice for Bruce and Celtics fans to know they do hold the home court advantage in that one.
And what we're talking about is we're not talking about winning a game or two. We're talking about trying to beat this team four times in a series. If there's a team out there that can do it, you know, more power to them. But that's asking an awful lot the way the Nuggets have played in the second half of the season.
No small task there. Now, moving our attention here to the Eastern Conference, let's focus in on the Cavaliers, Knicks, and Magic, as we've got an ongoing battle for the 3, 4, 5 spots. And most importantly, as I'm sure Bruce knows, it's important to keep in mind it might be wise to try to avoid facing Boston in that second round. Isn't that right, Bruce?
Well, yeah. I mean, look, if you finish third, it's not like it gets a whole lot easier. You'll end up with Milwaukee probably in the second round. But, you know, Milwaukee, you know, is 11 games behind Boston in the standings. So you would say, all right, I'd rather play Milwaukee, you know, than Boston. But look, let's start with the Cavaliers since they're currently holding down third place. They're currently on a 5-game road trip. They got their butts kicked by Denver on Sunday, lost by 29, and their next 4 games are on the road. Utah, Phoenix, Lakers, and Clippers, okay? And their final 3 are at home, Memphis, Indiana, and Charlotte, which, you know, 2 of those games, you know, ought to be, you know, easy Ws for them. But they may not even, you know, they might have, like, you know, taken themselves out of the 3 spot if they can't get a couple wins on this road trip. I mean, they got to at least get 2, if not 3, out of those next 4. And look, it's all about Donovan Mitchell with those guys. I mean, we've said this before. They need the Spider to return to form and fast. He's missed 24 of their 75 games. When he plays, 34-17. When he doesn't play, 11-13. He came back from his most recent injury, and he's got a little bit of rust he's got to shake off. But he's got, you know, he needs to get it together quickly, and it might be asking a lot, but you know, they seem to have most of their guys back now, so it's time for them to quickly kind of get their act together.
Yeah, and this West Coast trip is definitely going to give them quite a challenge. World B, what's your thoughts on the race out East and possibly the Cleveland Cavaliers? Do you think they'll hold on to that third spot?
It's going to be tough the way they played on the road, just 4-8 since the break on the road, lost the last 4 road games. And as Bruce mentioned, this road trip didn't get off to a great start when getting smacked around by Denver. They have opportunities to get some wins on the road here, but it's not going to be easy. As Bruce mentioned, the good news is for them, you know, Max Strus is back and Mitchell's back. These are key pieces. That's part of, you know, if you want a challenge, if you want to make it to that second round and possibly the conference finals, teams like this have to be at full strength. And they were at full strength basically last year going into the series and got pushed around by the Knicks. So you don't, you know, they know as much as anybody. You need to be at full roster, whatever. I mean, how much confidence can you have in a Cavaliers team that goes and loses to the Hornets at this point in the year? I mean, that's one that screams out yikes. I know it can happen to anybody. It almost happened to team we'll mention here, the Magic on Monday night, almost losing to Portland at home. But, you know, that's always a red flag. You lose to a team like the Hornets, that's a red flag to me going forward. No,
it totally is. Now, Bruce, I have a quick question for you here. If you had your choice and you had to pick a team of those 3, the Cavs, Knicks, and Magic, as a Celtics fan, who would you want to face in the second round?
I would not want to face the Knicks because they play so damn hard. Okay. Yeah. The Cavs, you know, again, if they're running on fumes when they get to the postseason, I might pick them because in many ways they're kind of inexperienced. They got whipped by the Knicks in the playoffs last year. And I think maybe I'd rather face the Magic of the 3 teams. Again, they have height. You know, they've got bigs. You know, Paolo is a man, and the Wagner brothers are, you know, doing great. You know, Cole Anthony coming off the bench is a bucket. So I think I would choose I would prefer to play the Magic, but I don't think they're going to beat the Knicks in the first round if they end up in a 4 versus 5. The Knicks, I think, will handle them.
Yeah, and I saw a report here as of Sunday night that OG Anunoby has not yet had any contact in practice thus far as he tries to make his way back onto the court for the New York Knicks. Any concerns there will be as far as hearing that news and whether or not you think he might be ready for the playoffs?
I was always concerned. I mean, that was the big question when he came aboard is how long could he, you know, could he stay healthy? That was, and it looked great for most of January when he came in. The Knicks were playing great. Randall, you know, they were really having a lineup that you thought could compete with the Bucks and the Celtics before, obviously, the Celtics just went on a major tear there. But, you know, it's, they're small. They're a small lineup right now without Mitchell Robinson just coming back for the Knicks helps. OG being out hurts. Randall being out hurts. Hartenstein is basically still the starter for the moment as Mitchell Robinson gets back in. But other than that, I mean, that's a small lineup on the court. They're successful now. They're really doing. Yeah, had a great game against the Thunder on Sunday night. They just missed a lot of free throws. And the game they lost in San Antonio, you know, overtime game where Brunson had 61, was a great game. They just, you know, didn't have it down the stretch. Here's one stat about the Knicks that's unbelievable. I read this, so I can't take credit for it, but it was on NBA.com.
Take credit for it, world.
No.
You're the numbers
you do,
guru.
You do what you got to do here. You do it right. The current lineup that they have, starting lineup, Hartenstein, Josh Hart, Jalen Brunson, DiVincenzo, and Deuce McBride. That lineup this season is scoring 140.8 points per 100 possessions, and they're outscoring opponents by 35.6 points per 100 possessions. That's unbelievable. Jeez. It's in limited minutes now. It's in the short term, but that, you know, that's about 150 minutes. That's an incredible number. Now, if they can, you know, that's the lineup they're going with right now. They're so shorthanded. So we'll see what's going forward. They have trouble in the clutch. That's not good in the playoff time. The two games this weekend, 29 points on 32 clutch possessions. That's not going to get it done in a series. So they got some things to work on. But of those three, I'd take the Knicks.
You know, in a scheduling sort of quirk, out of their last eight games, they play the Bulls three times in their last eight games, once at home and twice on the road. And the Bulls are kind of fighting to kind of get into the play-in. So, you know, they're going to be, you know, playing hard.
And no Jordan, right?
No Jordan, but they got Ayo Dosunmu and Kobe White, who'll probably take turns trying to like run Jalen Brunson through the ringer there on defense. But my biggest concern with those guys is Jalen Brunson wearing down, because he's had to carry that team like on his shoulders without Anunoby and without Randall, and you know, just taking. I mean, he's been heroic this year. I mean, no question about it.
Yeah, and speaking of scheduling quirks, Bruce, just a quick jab here. What happened in Atlanta to the Celtics? We had talked about that on playback. I got to bring it up. I mean, you guys were hanging out in Atlanta too long, I guess.
I think the Gold Club kept their kitchen open late for the Celtics. I mean, look, it's just pure and simple. The Hawks are better than the Celtics. They beat them twice.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Is that your April Fool's joke here tonight?
Could be. Yeah.
All right. And for our second half here, we're going to stay out east here. And the return of the MVP, I've got a question mark on that. As Shams reported earlier on Monday that Joel Embiid could return as soon as Tuesday night, when you guys are probably listening to this podcast. So, Bruce, are you buying this report, or is this just a cruel April Fool's joke to Sixers fans and NBA fans worldwide?
Well, Nick Nurse kind of alluded to this like last week, saying that he expected Embiid to be back before the end of the regular season. So if he does come back on Tuesday night against OKC, he'll be going up against a team that doesn't really have a whole lot of opposition other than Chet Holmgren on their front line. So it would, if he comes back and he plays, it will give him seven regular season games to get in shape before the play-in tournament, which they are likely to be participating in unless they run the table in those final seven and either Miami or Indiana collapses, which, you know, I'm not sure that's going to happen. So they're going to probably end up either seventh or eighth, meaning either Boston or Milwaukee is going to get them in the first round of the playoffs. Not your typical first round Patsy. No. You know, as we've said a number of times, Philly is 26-8 when he plays, 14-27 when he doesn't. He really is the MVP based on the differential in Philly's record with and without him. So all I can say is, I want him to be healthy. I want him to be able to play his game, and I want them to finish seventh.
Yeah. And will be when it comes to Joel Embiid's anticipated return. I mean, you'd have to imagine there's going to be a minutes restriction to start, right? And how do you ramp that up so late into the season? Do you have any concerns about just his usage here, like earlier on, to try to get back in gear with his team?
Oh, there's absolutely concerns. You can't not have it if you're a Sixers fan or an NBA fan. And his injury history on top of everything, you just don't know what you're going to get as far as endurance wise. I got to figure when he comes back, he's going to be, he might be a tad rusty, but I got to figure he's going to be the same type of player we've been watching for the last few years. It's just a matter of how long can you sustain that. And they really need him. I mean, the All-Star break, their offense has been awful since the break. Near the bottom in effective field goal percentage, near the bottom in offensive efficiency, and all this, obviously without Embiid. So they desperately need him. You're right. It's endurance is an issue. The other guys just, and, while we're mentioning this, Maxey's been out.
Yep.
So you got on top of everything else, you got, if you have those two and you have them healthy and they're playing, they have the endurance and they can get back into it, I'm telling you, there's no reason why they should fear anybody outside of Boston if they're all healthy. That's my opinion.
I can't disagree with that, because when you look at that roster and some of the surrounding players on that team, number one, Kelly Oubre has been a great signing for this team. I mean, we didn't give Kelly Oubre a lot of high stock in free agency, but he's been playing better basketball. He's scoring the basketball for the team. And then the trade deadline acquisition of Buddy Hield. I mean, we know what Buddy Hield can do when he's playing on par. So they've got some good rotational players surrounding their two stars. So I'm in agreement with you. I think they could certainly be the most lethal team in the East outside of Boston.
Well, didn't Legler say last week that if he comes back, it will be the biggest X factor in the history of the first round of the playoffs?
Yeah. I mean, that, well said.
I pumped the brakes a little bit on the Kelly Oubre parade, though. He had a good game the other night. He's still shooting 30% on threes this season, which is actually down from, imagine shooting 31% last season and seeing your percentage go down. So that's where we are. It hasn't been that pretty for Oubre.
Are you saying that he needs to get the Charlotte culture out of his system?
Oh, he has Charlotte in him all day long. He can't get rid of that. You can take the player out of Charlotte, but you can't take the Hornets out of the player, clearly.
Well, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take, Will B. Just remember that.
Oh,
and I didn't miss any because you don't take any on the bench. You don't miss any from the bench.
There we go. All right, and let's look at the rest of the West here. Of course, we did talk about the top three teams, but there's a lot still going on in the Western Conference standings. So let's first start off with a really good one here, and let's size up the New Orleans Pelicans and the Dallas Mavericks. And I'll start with you here, Bruce. I mean, of these two teams, which one do you like more?
You know, it's funny. I've undersold Dallas all season long. I wasn't a believer. I always found reasons to take shots at them. But you know what? They're 45-29. They stopped Houston's 11-game winning streak on Sunday. They've got a 7-game winning streak of their own going right now, including 5 straight on the road. Okay. They score. They make threes. They got a deadly scoring combo in their backcourt. Their defense has improved quite a bit. It needs to get a little bit better. But one thing I was surprised at when I was going through some stuff doing research for this show, They are number two in the league in block shots. And I guess you can put a lot of that on, you know, Derek Lively, and perhaps, you know, since he's been over at Daniel Gafford. So they've got bigs, they've got guards. They seem like a team that's kind of peaking at a good time. So, yeah, right now you'd have to give them the edge over the Pelicans, even though the Pelicans have won 10 out of their last 14. It's not like they're, you know, crap, although Devin Booker was lighting them up on Monday night. I'm not sure what he ended up with, but he had 37 at halftime.
Yeah, where'd that defense go? Go ahead, World B. Who do you got? Who do you like of those two teams, the Pelicans or Mavs?
I would take the Mavericks if it's a choice between the two. Brandon Ingram, you know, the health of Brandon Ingram is a question going forward. And now the Pelicans were one of the best teams in last month in March. They had one of the best defenses, had one of the best records, and we just never seemed to talk about them. So, yeah, they're just quietly doing their thing. But the Mavericks, as Bruce mentioned, you know, since, you know, in their last 12 games, 11-1, top five in offensive defensive efficiency in both. They're top three in shooting and opposing shooting. So, I mean, they're shutting them down. They're just really on a roll right now. And they have the two guys at the end of games that you can give the ball to and create their shot and get buckets. And Luka and Kyrie Irving. Kyrie Irving's having had a rough month shooting the ball. But other than that, he's still shooting 40% on both pull-ups and catch-and-shoot threes, which is pretty darn good. There's only a couple players in the league that can say they do shoot at 40% clip on both type of shots. So, you know, he's going to be a key. But when you have two guys like that, there aren't too many teams that have two bucket-getters like that that can create their own shots like Mavericks have. And they're – if playing the right time, you know, playing well at the right time counts for anything, they're doing it right now.
Yeah, and you mentioned those two stars in Luka and Kyrie, and they've got something a lot of the other teams out West might be lacking, and that's a point guard. They have two of them. They have two of the most elite point guards in the league that not only can create their own shot, but distribute to others. And that's something that I think New Orleans is lacking, clearly by what they're doing right now with Point Zion. I mean, no disrespect to C.J. McCollum. He's a fine player, but he's not a point guard. And I think come playoff time when the game slows down, you're going to really kind of see them missing that. And we've seen it missing from Phoenix all year long and why they haven't been as successful as maybe many had thought. You know, not having a traditional point guard, and Dallas has the luxury of having two of the best in the entire league on their team.
An interesting quirk about both of these teams, both the Mavericks and the Pelicans have better road records than home records. You really don't see that a whole lot amongst playoff teams. They're both, you know, the Mavs are 23-14 on the road. The Pels are 24-14 on the road. So, you know, and since they're fighting for the 5 and 6 spot, they'll both be opening on the road. So whoever ends up, you know, getting that 5 spot, if it's one of those two teams, you know, could rise to the occasion based on their, you know, track record.
No doubt about it. And we'll be the LA Clippers. They've won 3 straight games and look pretty comfortable sitting in that 4th spot. So would you consider them lurking, or do you think they're holding on for dear life now as a team that could be getting hot at the right time?
They're one of the most up and down teams for a team as good as they are. That I can think of. They, you know, they just got called out by, you know, this whole run that they're on is right after their coach Ty Lue called them soft. So he really gave it to them, and they responded like veterans. I mean, well, you know, you lose to the 76ers and the Hawks, you're going to get that, which is what they did a couple weeks ago. But you know what? The win at Orlando was a big one for the Clippers. But they also have wins over the 76ers and the Hornets. So I don't know where we are with them necessarily. I think the rest of the season, let's see them win at Sacramento. Let's see them beat up on the Kings. They got two of the Sixers on the back, the Suns on the back-to-back. So, you know, there's opportunities for them to really establish themselves as, hey, we can contend with the other, you know, three in the West. But you got to do something better than beat the Hornets and beat the Sixers, minus Embiid, before I am ready to And I'm the guy who picked them to get to the conference final before the season.
Yeah.
You know, they look to be a lock for fourth. I don't think they're moving up, and I don't really think they're moving down. So, you know, they're four games out of third. They're two games ahead of fifth. They're another team like the Pelicans and the Mavericks, better on the road than they are at home. Okay. And I got to give Ty Lue a lot of credit. My biggest concern about this team going into the season and why I thought they wouldn't finish higher than fifth, and I'll be wrong about that, I was concerned about their health. But the big three of Leonard, George, and Harden are all healthy. None of them have missed more than like eight games this season. So he's managed their, you know, DNPs. Westbrook is now back. And as far as the two most likely first-round opponents between Dallas and New Orleans, the Clippers are 2-1 against Dallas, but they're 1-3 against New Orleans. So they would probably rather see Dallas in the first round. And here's the thing. Nothing really stands out statistically about this team. They've got a great record. So, you know, that tells me they simply find ways to win. So that to me is a great, you know, quality in a team where you don't necessarily put up the gaudy numbers, but at the end of the game, you won and they lost. So I don't think anybody really wants to see this team in the playoffs.
No, I don't think anyone wants to, but at the same time, I'm still trying to get a pulse on how scary they are. I mean, their defense has been terrible here recently. They're looking to be a team that looks like they can just think they can turn it on come playoff time. Now, they have the players capable of possibly doing that because they have the star power. But that's really not a recipe for success I would really want to lean on. So still very up in the air with the LA Clippers come playoff time. Now, looking at the battle for seventh out west, we've got an ugly one between the Sacramento Kings and the Phoenix Suns. The Kings just got some really bad news here recently with Kevin Huerter being out for the season due to injury. Keon Ellis is going to have to step up for them. And then for Phoenix, I mean, this has just been a team that's been in flux all year. They certainly haven't really gelled together as a group. Obviously look like they certainly needed a point guard out there. But, Bruce, the Suns have an absolutely brutal schedule down the stretch, don't they?
Yeah, they do. I mean, they've got four home games left against Cleveland, Minnesota, New Orleans, and the Clippers, four playoff teams. They have four road games, New Orleans, the Clippers, Sacramento, and Minnesota, four playoff teams. So they got to go. They got no cupcakes coming down the stretch. The Kings have a pretty tough schedule of their own. I don't know that it's quite that tough, but look, you know, with the Suns, I mean, they've got those three that are all capable of getting you 30 on a given night. I mean, Devin Booker is sitting on 48, and I think he's, you know, there's about 4 minutes left in their game against New Orleans tonight. Phoenix is up by 13 with about four and change left. So, you know, we know that they're, Phoenix is an offensive, you know, juggernaut in many ways, you know, 49.5% as a team from the floor. They rebound well. They have pretty solid defense. The Kings don't rebound as well as the Suns, but otherwise they're comparable offensive and defensively. So, but I'd say the big two of KD and Booker, they're going to get you 54 a game, while Fox and Sabonis are going to get you 46. So I would give the Suns a slight edge.
All right. World B?
I would give the Suns the edge. You look at the Kings. The Kings had their two biggest games of the season last week at home against Dallas with a chance to really establish themselves in this playoff picture, and they lost them both. And now you mentioned Herter's out for the season. We haven't mentioned yet. Malik Monk is probably out for the season with his knee injury that he suffered last week. And he had been struggling shooting the ball of late, but he's sixth man of the year leading contender. So you're talking about two big-time perimeter shooters when they're on their game being out for the – and big contributors to last season being out for the – you know, basically out for the rest of the season unless Monk can somehow recover and they can, you know, get the job done here in the playoffs. You got to like – in that matchup, you got to like Phoenix with their roster. Although, as Bruce said, as you mentioned to Ross, good luck trying to figure them out. I mean, it's just all that talent and just and nothing really to show for it. It really, there's no identity with this team.
Yeah, when taking a look at these two teams, of course, last week we had some fun watching the Kings host the Mavericks on playback and really didn't see a sense of urgency from Sacramento, which was very concerning. And it seemed like the crowd was looking for anything to cheer for, and this team wasn't giving them much to really get enthusiastic about. And as for Phoenix, they're a tough one to gauge as well. Good thing for us, we're going to be back on 48 Minutes Live on playback for the Cavs-Suns game, which should be a lot of fun to go ahead and see how Phoenix is looking down the stretch against one of the top teams in the Eastern Conference. That should be a lot of fun. But I would go with Phoenix just because of the star power and, of course, the recent injuries to the Sacramento Kings. So, all right, World B, this is not an April Fool's joke. The Golden State Warriors have rattled off four straight road wins, and I wanted to get your reactions to that.
Well, I mean, there's solid on solid defense, finally. I mean, you know, that four-game win streak, they've allowed less than 104 points per 100 possessions. But then you look at the opponents, you have Miami, Orlando, Charlotte, San Antonio. Show me the offense that scares you in that group. There is none, because they all rank in the bottom 10 in efficiency. So the run is great for the Warriors, but again, got to pump the brakes a little bit here because they haven't exactly gone up against the titans of the offensive world here in their last four opponents. But it's an amazing thing, the Western Conference. They win four straight, and they're just buried in that 10th spot. They just can't get – you know, you haven't mentioned the Lakers. The Lakers are on a roll here. They're buried in the ninth spot. They just – the West is so ridiculously stacked. Nobody can get any momentum. I mean, here are the Mavericks winning all these things, and they're just – they're not creeping any closer. They're getting a little bit, but not a whole lot. The West is just is unbelievable this season.
Bruce, are you impressed with what Golden State has done as far as rattling off four straight road wins?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's not like they've played the greatest teams in the world, but road wins are tough. And again, yet another team with a better road record than home record. The Warriors have really struggled at home this year. They're under 500, which is unheard of for them in this era. They're currently 10th. We kind of, you know, need to talk to them in kind of combo with the Lakers, who are currently 9th. They're going to play a game on April 9th head-to-head. And that game is in L.A., and that could very well decide the 9 versus 10 spot, depending on what happens between now and then. But, I mean, look, this feels like a group that if they can get into the play-in game, I think they might have one decent playoff run left in them if they can snag the 8th seed. And their best chance is going to be if they can go against OKC, a young team that rebounds poorly, as we've said. If they get Minnesota or Denver in the first round, I don't think they're going to be able to beat either of those two teams. But, you know, Rudy Tomjanovich's, you know, famous quote rings in my ears, you know, never underestimate the heart of a champion. And this team does still have a championship core, although they're aging. But if this season ends with a first round loss or a play-in loss, I would not be shocked if Draymond and Clay are not back next season. But with Brandon Podziemski, Jonathan Kuminga, and Trayce Jackson-Davis, they could reload pretty quickly with Steph and the young dudes. So, you know, Golden State is not where they'd like to be, but it's, you know, I still think they might have a little bit of gas in the tank here.
Yeah, they would play have a chance to play spoiler again in that first round. Obviously, last year was Sacramento having a surprising season, but being a young, inexperienced playoff team, they took advantage of that. If they get OKC, could they do it again? Be a lot of fun to see in a 7-game series, those two teams going toe-to-toe. So, Bruce, with the Warriors having this recent road success, rattling off four straight, do you think the Houston Rockets blew their chances on Sunday losing to the Mavericks?
Yeah. I mean, I think that loss has put them firmly into the toast category. They had won 11 straight. But this really messed them up because they now trail 10th seed Golden State by 2 games. And I believe Golden State also has the tiebreaker. So it's really 2 games plus. They would have had a chance at the play-in since they do play the Warriors on Thursday. But now that they're 2 back plus the tiebreaker, I just don't think it's going to be too much to overcome. And the Rockets have 5 of their final 8 games on the road. But I got to say, in spite of all of the kind of negativity of the last, 24, 48 hours, this has been a really successful season for Ime Udoka and the Rockets. And next season, I can't wait to see what they got.
Yeah, they're only going to build up from here. World B, do you think that loss on Sunday to the Mavericks really doomed the Rockets' chances?
Absolutely. They would need to really continue this role that they've been on and have the Warriors really go into pooper to overtake them. It's tough in the NBA to make up that much ground. It's not like in baseball where you can be down three games with 2 weeks to play and catch up because you play every day. This is tough for them. But Bruce is right. The run that they've been on is really unbelievable. Jalen Green went from one of the worst shooters in the league for about 4 months to one of the top players in the league in a month. If he doesn't get player of the month in March, just do away with the award, because he's been the best player in the Western Conference in March. And Jabari Smith is finally finding the shot. They were playing him at center for a good stretch during this run, which is really kind of crazy on the surface, but he's about 6'10", 6'11", and he can do the things that, when he's on his game, like Kevin Durant can do, hit from the perimeter. They've had some really good moments here, and playing on the road has not been good for them this season. They're a much better team at home, especially defensively. So that's going to make it tough. But kudos for them for really making the rest of the Western Conference sweat it out there. They were crawling. You could see them. They were coming up.
Yeah, and they've done it all without their big man, Big Alpi, Alperen Sengun, which has been even more impressive. So
absolutely.
Next year should be a promising one for the Houston Rockets in year two under the leadership of Ime Udoka. Now, Bruce, you are our Connecticut resident here, so let's switch our focus real quickly here to college basketball and March Madness. And got to ask you, are the UConn men's team the sickest crew you've seen in a while?
If the NBA were to expand to 31 teams today, I would nominate UConn to be the 31st team. Ooh. I mean, I know this is an NBA show, but I mean, what they've done in this NCAA tournament is, you picked the right word, Ross, sick. They hit number 3 seed Illinois with a 30-0 run over the weekend to turn a tie game into a 53-23 lead. And the last 12 and a half minutes was garbage time after that. In their 4 tournament wins, their average margin of victory has been almost 28 points. And they've got, I think, 3, maybe 4 NBA guys on their roster. I mean, Donovan Clingan's stock has risen dramatically. He's a lottery pick if he comes out. Stephon Castle, who's a freshman, he's a lottery pick if he comes out. And I don't know how much you've seen Alex Caravan, but that dude can stroke it. I mean, he's got 3-point range. He's 6'8". He's only a sophomore too, I believe. That guy's an NBA shooter. He's a knockdown guy. Tristan Newton and Cam Spencer, they may not be drafted, but I guarantee they'll both be in somebody's training camp. They're going to have a chance to make NBA roster somewhere. So if the Huskies can win it all next Monday night, they'll be the first team to repeat as NCAA champions since the Florida Gators of 2007, and that team had 5 NBA players on its roster. Al Horford, Joakim Noah, Corey Brewer, Maurice Spates, and Torian, son of Sidney Green. And their coach was Billy Donovan, who's the current head coach of the Chicago Bulls. So kudos to UConn. It's been unbelievable run for them.
They look to be the favorites, don't they, World B?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you don't get more convincing heading into Final Four than they have. I mean, I can't remember a team that's, I'm not going to hand them the championship yet, but I can't remember a team that dominated the way they dominated heading into the Final Four. Maybe off the top of my head, I think Duke of 99, the year that UConn beat them in the final. Duke that season dominated going to the Final Four, and everybody thought it was the shocker of shockers that UConn beat them, except UConn was number 2 most of the season when Duke was number 1. So other than that, that's 25 years since then. I mean, off the top of my head, that's the closest I can think of a dominating run like this since UConn's run right now.
Yeah, and before we finish up here tonight, let's all give our one-liner to close out the show. Bruce?
On Friday night, Spurs rookie Victor Wembanyama had a 40-point, 20-rebound, 7-assist performance in an overtime win against the Knicks, who received a 61-burger from Jalen Brunson. At the final buzzer, Wemby tossed the ball into the stands in celebration, not realizing that the ball was a valuable piece of memorabilia. On Sunday, the league fined the presumptive rookie of the year $25,000 for the turnover, but hopefully the Spurs are going to be reimbursing him for his act of enthusiasm.
Yeah, they certainly should with the performance that he had, but kind of a funny way to close out that game. World B?
Yeah, I'll make it real quick. I think based off his 61-point performance, doing it basically on his own without two key players in the lineup for the last 2 months, if Jalen Brunson doesn't finish in the top five of the MVP voting, I'll be extremely disappointed. He absolutely deserves. I don't care about the other guys who are on the list. We know who's going to win it. If he's not top five, it'll be really a disappointment and an oversight.
Yep, I think it's warranted as well. Now, for my one-liner of the night, I've got a Tuesday night parlay at plus 121 odds as of taping, and that is Lakers money line against the Raptors in Toronto. Toronto has no interest in winning basketball games. And I've got the Mavericks money line against the Warriors in Golden State. Despite how well the Warriors have been playing, I'll go ahead and take Luka and Kyrie on the road at Golden State for that one. And if you're feeling frisky, add the Clippers money line against the Kings in Sacramento to push the odds up to plus 302. So feel free to flip-flop one of those if you like the Clippers in Sactown over the Mavericks. But that is your best bets from me here tonight. And with that, that will do it for this edition of the 48 Minutes Podcast on Believe, presented by Bet Online. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll be back with you next week to be sure you're up to date in 48 on all things around the association. Take care, everybody.